I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into the planning and development of a vineyard.
And I look at Sauvignon Blanc too, as it can be very transparent of the farming style.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
For most people who are really into wine, being a wine dude, a wine nut, or whatever you want to call it, I think they all have a wet dream to make their own wine eventually.
I really have fun with doing my job, with doing wine, with being viticulturist.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar, and I'm thinking, great.
As much as I love Chardonnay, I didn't want to spend my nights worrying about it and my days talking about it.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
In another beautiful, sunny day in Napa Valley, in a room full of half-crazy, half passionate people. I mean, how bad could it be?
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 195. This week we feature Todd Graff of Frank Family Vineyards in Napa Valley. It's amazing to find out just how many Napa Valley wineries date back over 100 years. Few realize how big the wine industry was growing in those days. History surrounds Frank Family Vineyards Winery, which is on the National Register of Historical Places. But far more important is the high-quality wine produced at Frank. Todd Graff has made wine around the world and has been winemaker and GM at Frank Family since 2003. We caught up with Todd at the winery in June of this year to laugh as well as talk shop. Years in the making, folks. We're here with Todd Graff, General Manager and winemaker at Frank Family Vineyards. How you doing, Todd?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day. We got wine auction tomorrow. Maybe a little warm, but we're inside, so we got air conditioning, so it's beautiful.
Just got done with a great tasting in what was the original cellar, the original winery?
Correct. It was built in, started in the 1890s and completed in 1906. So 2.5-foot stone wall building, two stories, gravity fed, original California winery. I'm guessing the stones probably came from some of the caves on the hills. We're down in the flatlands, so we probably took their rocks and made our own cave.
It's amazing to be in that building, though. And you know, you're talking about the early century earthquake, let alone the latter ones, all these different ones. Pretty amazing how these buildings really were made to last.
Yeah, I hope so, because I work in it. Yeah, so fun. Yeah. So that's good too. And you know, and I think Calistoga, north end of the Napa Valley, I don't think the faults go up here as far as much as they do at the southern end of the Napa Valley. So I'm hoping there's a little science involved and then a little good engineering from the old days.
Spoken like a true winemaker.
Yeah.
Who's fearing a building falling on him. How long have you been a winemaker?
Well, I went to school at Davis, University of California, Davis. I graduated in 84, so been doing it ever since then, and now it's all I know what to do.
No, that's cool. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, there is nothing wrong with that. I think if all the decisions young kids have to make, I made a pretty good one.
Yeah, you made a great decision. Yeah. So, that decision, how did it happen? I mean, were you a wine drinker before that?
No, more as any kid around that age, probably more a beer drinker. But I grew up in Northern California, and I like being here, so I wanted to stay. So then I kind of knew I wanted to work outdoors when I wanted to work outdoors. I wanted to work indoors when I wanted to work indoors. I think I wanted to create something. I knew I wasn't going to be the valedictorian of my class, so I wasn't going to med school. So, but I still wanted to play with some science and some art, and I wanted to travel around the world. And you know, you circle all those things, and you look in the intersection, and there's a career called winemaking in the middle of that somewhere.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah, yeah.
So you did have that opportunity. You've been to many, many other countries.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I made that a priority early, so I've done vintages in Germany, in Australia, France, and then I did a 5-year stint in Portugal.
Wow.
And then a flying winemaker gig where I flew back and forth. And then, you know, just being in the industry in Napa, you interact with a global winemaking community. So I've been able to travel throughout Europe, and I've traveled a lot, you know, New Zealand, Australia, Asia, but you always center around wine somehow.
Sure. You know, you sound that you're oddly organized. It sounds like you really did have a plan. Is that right?
Yeah. I wish I could take credit for all of that, but sometimes dumb luck is better than no luck. You know, I put my priorities early as traveling and getting as much experience as I could. Mm. And then again, we're really lucky here. I hope everybody realizes it. Northern California, and we're in Napa Valley. It's a pretty nice place to call home. So you can do all this traveling, and when you get back, you just go, you know, I'm home.
Yeah, it's got to make your heart feel real good to come back to this.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, again, there's probably a lot of luck involved.
Yeah, well, and maybe some of your winemaking skills.
Which, yeah, maybe.
You know, after this tasting, not too bad. You do a pretty good job. How long have you been a winemaker here at Frank
so
Family?
So, Frank Family, this will be my 14th vintage here. So, we're almost getting to know what we're doing. So, yeah. You know, Mother Nature throws us a curveball once in a while, but we ride it out, and hopefully we swing, go to the right field with it if we have to. But the last few vintages have been fantastic, so we're pretty excited.
Yeah, you've had some pretty good years here. I think one of the nicest things, you started out the tasting with a sparkler, which I really liked, a rosé sparkling wine, and I never knew you guys even did that, and as you brought up that you were going to go down that path. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about
that? Sure. So it was fun. The winery that Frank Family is now, historically, was Hans Cornell, who was one of the Renaissance winemakers of Napa Valley in the 50s and 60s after Prohibition. And then coincidentally, I had cut my teeth at Schramsberg here in Napa Valley, who makes some of, in my opinion, some of the best sparkling wines in California. So when I came on board, it was just a natural to continue this sparkling tradition that was at this property. And I really appreciate the Schramsberg style. So to mold the wines after, you know, good California sparkling wines. And I've been to Champagne a few times. It's the one wine I think I have a wine club membership to, a couple of them.
Really?
So I drink a lot of champagne. It's my drug of choice is champagnes and sparkling wines. So I worked for the Cotarnu family, the Reventos family that own Cotarnu in Spain. So I think I know that niche of the wine industry pretty well. So, and I enjoy doing it. So we make a Blanc de Blanc, Chardonnay style, a rosé. We do something fun here. We do a rouge, so a red sparkling wine. It's only sold in the tasting room. Yeah, so it's like sparkling Pinot Noir. So it's the color of Pinot Noir, still wine, but it's got fizz in it, so it's kind of fun. It's a great veranda wine. Most countries do them. California is not known to do a lot of them. There's a few out there, but it's pretty festive. The holidays with turkey and ham, amazing match for the meal. And then we do a little more aged wine, slightly barrel fermented, or partially barrel fermented is the better term, a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
So this sounds like something you're itching to do anyway, you know?
Yeah, no, and I've done it for a long time, and it fit here. It all just matched. And so it works really well.
It's funny, as we sit here at this table, I'm guessing, is that some of them sitting there, the unlabeled?
That is. Those are the shiners we're looking at of a future wine we're going to call Lady Edith, after Rich's mom, Rich Frank, the owner of Frank Family Vineyards. And I can't see from here, but I know one has a necker on it.
I can see
it. So we're doing labels and trying to get the label. So that was my project before right now. Was working on it. And that's another fun part about what we get to do. You know, we get to walk vineyards, taste wine, work in the cellar, work in the finance, work in the market, and get to design labels. So it's a fun job to never ends, and there's always plenty to do.
Oh, yeah. God, I can imagine. I think what attracted me to those, I saw them, is without the labels, it creates a little bit of intrigue, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. So we are actually going with a no capsule on top, so it gives it that kind of naked look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's a great way to go. I like that. So that's exactly what they would be seeing in a retail location-ish? Obviously not the label, but...
Correct. Yeah, but the tops, yeah, and that's what you see. And that one will be tasting room only, so it'll be pretty exclusive to the winery only.
Cool. What would something like that sell for?
We haven't decided yet, but it'll be north of 75.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be something that'll have a certain amount of value to it.
Yes, correct. And it'll be a 5-year aged champagne. Or sparkling wine, excuse me.
That's all right. We won't slap you for that.
Yeah.
The champagne police will be showing up at your house tonight.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't disagree with them.
Okay, so kind of going a very different direction, and especially because someone like you who's been in this business for such a long period of time, a couple, one or two stories you could relate that were like, wow, lucky we did this, or wow, that was crazy.
I mean, in my youth, my first couple of vintages, the crazy part was being lucky we were alive still, of jumping in tanks and shoveling them out and going crazy, or not mentioning any names of wineries, but, you know, lowering down beer cans to guys shoveling, you know, tanks, or filling tanks up from the bottom with water to make swimming pools, and, you know, all the fun the kids did. But that was good times. You know, the main thing about good stories is, you know, you work really hard to put a blend together and bottle it. Sometimes you're 100% sure it was a good thing. Sometimes you're not 100% sure that was the thing, but it was the best you could do.
Yeah.
And then to open it in 5, 6, 10 years and go, wow. So fun, that's a good part of just a trust in your gut instinct and saying, I can't explain it, but that is the wine we got to do.
Yeah.
And then it works. So that's kind of the fun stuff.
That's kind of one element of winemaking is, it is trusting what's in your gut.
There's a lot of instinct, and you get instinct with experience and just doing.
Yeah.
It's not a spectator sport.
No, definitely not. Yeah. You were talking about at the tasting, the final wine we tasted was the Patriarch. All the wines we tasted were very, very good. The Patriarch, though, was so amazing. Again, can we talk a little bit about how you came to finding this particular combination?
Sure. Well, we wanted to do 100% Cabernet from Winston Hill Vineyard, which is Rich and Leslie's vineyard. It's an exceptional vineyard, so the raw material is pretty dang good. So we got that going for us. And then it's really just making the best wine possible. But then after 2 years of living with it and come blending time, we're taking just the wines that just blend and marry. I think you saw some structure, some grip, but a great balance, a silkiness all the way through and length. And that's what we're looking for. We want this wine to taste as good today on release as it does in 10, 15 years.
Yeah, it was very balanced and also just an incredible finish and a great nose, but the finish.
But you could see after you tasted it and count to 20, 30, you wanted to sip it again.
Yep.
It made you want to drink it. It was no work on your part. It makes you want to drink it. And that's, you know, the best compliment is an empty bottle.
Yes. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So again, kind of turning a different corner here, again, considering the period of time you've been doing this, what makes you crazy about the wine business? What's one of these things that just kind of like, what the heck, you know?
You know, there's certain things still we don't understand. You know, marketing, sales can make a guy crazy. Fortunately, we've done well. Crazy in a good way, it keeps you going, as you're learning something new every day. As soon as you think you know what you're doing, Mother Nature throws you a curveball, and you've never seen that curveball before. And then what's fun with this elevated age that I'm at is, I remember that 10 years ago. You know, where, so it's not all the first time, but again, with Mother Nature, a lot of it is the first time too. So it's like, in 2011, I don't know how many growers that I talked to that were in the retirement stage and said, we've never seen a vintage like this. And so that's kind of crazy, fun, scary. So that you know, that's what keeps you up at night, those things. But, you know, all of it is what keeps you up at night is, did I make the right blend? Did I make the right decision? You get one shot a year. Did I make the right decision? And you can say, well, I can get it next year. Well, the rules won't be the same next year as they are this year. So you get one shot a lot of times.
That's a lot on your shoulders.
Yes, it is. You know, use a bad sports analogy. You want to be up with the bases loaded and two outs. You want the ball in the last seconds. You know, you want the ball in your hand. Runny. I think all winemakers, they want the ball. Now, are they, not all of them, not every guy hits a home run in the last inning. Not everybody makes the basket. But you'd rather have the ball in your hand and shoot it than the guy that doesn't have the ball. So if you enjoy it, you want that pressure. And then that's not pressure, I don't think.
No, if you love it and you enjoy it. But I think you just named a new wine right there. You want the ball.
Yeah.
Like that. That's good. One thing we were talking about today with one winemaker, and it rarely comes up, is the dangers of being a winemaker, the dangers of working in a cellar or being a cellar rat. It's some scary stuff.
It can be. Yeah, no. So, that's great. You introduce that. And I remember, first of all, California is about as safe as it gets. No different in the United States. We have building permits, building laws, and we have OSHA responsibilities here. So we're about as safe. Other countries, not so much. You know, you're leaning ladders on tanks, and the ladder's half the size of the tank, and you got to do a pull up to get. But I do remember in Australia one time doing the pull up on a tank, and a tree frog was on it. So what do when you touch something wet and gooey? You let go. Well, fortunately, you're hanging on by. So, and then it's like, oh, okay. So there's a lot of times where you think, oh my God, how did I not slip, fall, and go? When I was working in Portugal, this had nothing to do with me. It was the year prior. As you know, in the Douro, where I was in the Douro, they make lots of port wine, which they fortify. The government ships them their fortified brandy material. Well, one young enologist, as you know, but back then for sure, and more than in America, United States, they smoke. So he's trying to see if the tank's full. Well, what do you grab? You grab your lighter. You light to see inside the tank. Well, it's 80% brandy and all the fumes. We called it the Portuguese Space Project because that tank lifted off. The poor young lad fortunately got blown straight back onto the catwalk, but the whole tank looked like one of those Jiffy Pop tops. So there's those stories. So safety, those stories exist. When I worked in France, they just jump in these tanks. They're full of CO2 to shove them out. And the old peasant farmers were like, my uncle died. It's just cost of doing business.
Yeah.
We're fortunately a little more advanced than that, but those stories exist, and they are scary because there's true stories to that where, in the wine industry, at least once a year, it seems like somebody, and we take a lot of precaution, it's part of our job to take the process serious.
Sure, you don't want to lose anybody.
No, yeah, not good.
With all these different places that you've worked, when you came here to Frank Family, did you apply, I understand you would apply a certain amount of knowledge, but specifically to the winemaking, did you kind of draw from each place?
Sure, no, I'm really good at stealing from everybody. I'm a proponent of stealing the best ideas from whoever I work with. And I think one of the best things young winemakers can do is, eyes open, ears open, and when you're working for a winemaker or somebody, do what they ask, do what they want, learn that system, and then move on. Or, you can professionally challenge systems, but learn the system, because some 10 years from now, you're going to go, oh, I did that 10 years ago. It worked.
Yeah.
Boom. So, so I've stole from everybody. And the you can skin a cat 9 ways. I don't even know that's a saying, but... if you bring 10 winemakers into this room and ask, how would you do this process? You'd get 10 answers. None of them are wrong. None of them might be all right. But I'm one of those guys that would take, I like that part of your answer. I like that part of your answer. And I like that part of your answer. And I put them together. So I did. Yeah, I steal as much as possible.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and you're all doing the same thing.
We're all trying to get some... get some nice wines into the bottle. And globally, we're all, and the community, global community has gotten so much tighter over the years. I was just in France 2 weeks ago, and they're more open. They're doing things that 10 years ago they would say they don't do. And this isn't good or bad, but I think we're influencing that way as much as they used to influence this way. And I think that's pretty cool.
I think it's very cool because everybody's going to benefit in the end.
Yeah.
We get better wine as wine drinkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense. About how many cases of wine are you doing here?
Sure. So Frank Family, the total winery is about 100,000 cases. Mm-hmm. So we do 4 main varietals, Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon being the big two, and then Zin and Pinot Noir, all Napa based. And then amongst those, we do another set of wines that are reserve and vineyard designated off those varieties. And the Napa tier is mainly wholesaled. The vineyard designated is mainly sold at the winery.
And is that same thing go for the Patriarch, sold here?
Sold at the winery, yes. Okay. Maybe you can see it online. Sometimes it is, sometimes. But it's usually allocated pretty severely. Hopefully we'll have a wine club just for those wines.
Nice.
But right now, tasting room only.
About how many cases of Patriarch?
500.
Okay, so it's very limited.
Yeah.
Nice, very cool. For our listeners who would like to learn about Frank Family and about you, how would they do that online?
Sure. So the best way is our website, and it's a cutting edge 1980, so be patient with us. It's www.frankfamilyvineyards.com, and vineyards is plural. It's all spelled out. It's long, but you'll get it and go through it, and we're in the process of updating that, so hopefully next year at this time, we've got a new flashy website.
Cool, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And if our listeners want to come here, you are both by appointment and they can come by, is that right?
That we don't need an appointment. Okay. If it's more than six people, we appreciate it. Mm. It always helps for timing of things, but if it's just a couple people or if you don't mind just popping in, depending on how busy it is, take your chances, that's fine too. We're open every day of the year except Christmas and Thanksgiving. So,
they should give you a day off once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that those days I'm still drinking. But
you got to experiment.
Yeah, you know, about 10 to 5 every day. So, yeah, no, north end of Napa Valley, we got a great tasting room. Super fun. Big lawn for picnics. Yeah.
It's a nice piece of property in general.
It is, yeah.
Do you ever sneak out into the tasting room every now and then just to kind of see how
I
things
do,
go?
Yeah, especially around happy hour.
Yeah.
I need to do some quality control. I'll pop in. But yeah, in some afternoons I'll go over, say hi, and see how everything's going. Yeah.
I think it's pretty exciting for people who are visiting to meet the winemaker.
Yeah, no, I should probably do it more, but yeah, I try to do it once in a while. Yeah.
This is a great tasting tonight. Thanks for taking the
good,
time.
No, glad to see you again. Yeah.
Terrific.
Cool.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers to you.
Learn more by visiting frankfamilyvineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our intern is Eden Herbert. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2016.